Do we want 36 to replace 47, which really has had, with all the studies that it's had over the years, it's been 10 year, over 10 years, with all the studies that it's had, none of the reporting has been negative. It's been a very helpful law. It's smart on crime, and again, just locking up people, separating families, creating more felonies in all of our states doesn't help.
My guest has been Dortel Williams, serving a life sentence at Mule Creek State Prison. During his 30 years of incarceration, he's earned multiple academic degrees and written books, and he's a regular contributor to this program. You can find his latest story published in LA Progressive called "Are We Responding to Crime or Reacting to It?" I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
Tune in at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to community radio KBOO 90.7.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host this evening, Annette Newell. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation we have with the people running to represent Portland, and there are so many of them this year. In this episode, we're very fortunate to be talking with City Commissioner Carmen Rubio, who is running for mayor. So we want you to join this conversation. You can call the air room right now with questions for candidates. Here's the number, 503-231-8187, or you can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, kboo.fm, and you can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. First, let's meet our candidate, very special lady here, Carmen Rubio.
Hi.
I've been following your career for a long time and am really fascinated, especially with your life story and where you came from. So tell us about that. You are from Hillsborough.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to be here. Very excited to be here. A longtime listener of KBOO. So, yes, I grew up in Hillsborough, Oregon. I was born there. My parents and grandparents moved from out of state into the Western Washington County area. My grandparents and my dad dad are from Mexico, from different states in Mexico, from Chihuahua and Durango, Mexico. And they came over into the U.S. Looking for a better life for their families, and worked their way as migrant workers up from Texas into New Mexico, into Northern California, and then finally staying permanently in Oregon after picking every fruit and vegetable that you can think of. And that's where they made their lives. And that's where my parents met. They were both in a migrant camp at the time. And we have, you know, huge families on both sides. My dad, I believe, is one of six. And then my mom is one of 11 children, of siblings. And so I grew up with a lot of family around. And yeah, I'm an Oregon girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for part of your childhood, at least, I know something that you've talked about frequently is that you were housing insecure, and that's part of what motivated you to get into public service. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So before I was, you know, the age of 14, we had probably moved about 10 times. And to me, you know, I grew up not being very aware of, you know, our financial status. I didn't know that we were low income. I didn't, you know, but we grew up sort of taking care of family and taking care of each other. We always had family living with us. We were living with family. We moved multiple times. We rented a lot until my parents were finally able to purchase a home later. And I didn't know that there was a term for that, mm-hmm. you know, until I was much older and I was involved in social work and community-based organization programming, and worked with families that were very similar in a lot of ways to how I grew up. So it gave me a very unique perspective in the kind of work I do, both in terms of programmatically for the community, but also in policy as well.
And you ended up being the first person in your family to go to college, right?
Yes, yes.
How did that happen? How did you make that happen?
Yeah. Well, when I was going to high school, I was never someone that was tracked or, you know, supported to go to college. But I did have some really good teachers who saw something in me. And I remember one of my teachers, after starting the new school year one year, called me out of class and asked for my mom's phone number and said, you know, you don't belong in this class. You belong in the college prep class, and I need to call your mom. So she called my mother, and then from that moment on, I had a whole new world open up for me, and that college was a possibility, and also feeling seen by my teacher. That was a really important pivotal life moment for me. And my mom, who didn't go to college, and actually she was one of the older kids, she had to actually drop out of high school and get her GED so that she could work along with some of the older siblings for the family. She really wanted me to go to college. So she was my big cheerleader. She was the one that did research on scholarships. She's really the one, I think, that helped me actually get motivated and then actually be successful, even though she had never went. And then I applied to University of Oregon. It was the only school assembly around college that I had seen. So that was the only school that I had actual, you know, engagement with. And right away, fell in love with the idea of University of Oregon. And that's mm-hmm. where I went.
Mm-hmm. And what did you study there?
So I studied multiple things. I was one of those students that wasn't quite sure what, you know, where they wanted to end up when I started. So I went in thinking I would pursue journalism. Then I got very interested in history. Then I got interested in sociology. But ultimately, I ended up in political science with a minor in ethnic studies. And I would say that tracks pretty well with what my interests have fully developed to become.
Now, you told me earlier that you never really had this track in your mind that I'm going to be mayor someday.
No, most definitely did not. That was not something that I even fathomed. I actually was very interested in advocacy, in working for community-based organizations, working for candidates or working for elected officials, like doing policy that would actually help underserved communities or build power in communities. So I always saw myself as more of a support role or a staffer. And that sort of was my role for several years. And so it wasn't ever anything that I thought for myself until much later in my life.
You did work for City Commissioner Nick Fish.
Yes.
At one point. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
So I worked for Commissioner Fish and for Mayor Potter. And they were different people, but had very similar values around community, around having an open door and being accessible to the public. Mayor Potter in particular, very much because he had a previous role as the chief of police for the city of Portland that was a very progressive, you know, chief and then a very progressive mayor, was very, very community centered. And that very much aligned with my values. And it was at a time where City Hall wasn't very open to a lot of community members and wasn't very accessible. And there weren't a lot of people of color actually as staffers or in other key positions. So that was a very a time of breaking through and opening doors. And then Commissioner Fish continued that kind of sense of service. And he had this really special way of bringing people together that sometimes had vast differences, but he was able to find common ground. And so that's something that he was really able to teach me.
Okay. And then how did it come about that you eventually ran to be on the commission and eventually won your election in 2020?
Yeah. So following my time with Commissioner Fish, it was after President Obama was elected, and I felt very called to go back onto the community side. And in fact, some of my community elders and leaders in the Latine community, you know, they said, well, you know, we have this community organization that is, you know, struggling to find new leadership. And one of our major organizational or community-based organizations that had been in the community for multiple decades had recently shut their doors. So they wanted to make sure that this other, you know, a lot of these community assets that had been so invested in over the years maintained and grew. And so they asked me to consider taking on that responsibility, and I did. So I left the city and went to work at Latino Network, and I was there for the next 11 years.
And what is Latino Network, and what does it do for people who might not know?
It's a culturally specific community-based organization that's serving primarily immigrant and Latinx communities and also anyone really, but with a cultural responsivity to those specific communities in, you know, programs around economic justice, workforce development, education, youth development, early childhood, and advocacy and leadership development. So it was a very comprehensive community-based program, and we've had a lot of impact in the community over that time and really grew over mm-hmm. those 11 years.
Mm-hmm. And it has grown to be a lot more staff and budget than it used to have, right?
Yes, yes. When I started, we operated out of a little house that we used to rent from a church in Northeast Portland, and actually North Portland. And at the time, we had maybe less than 10 staff and some programs and a little more than $500,000 budget. And over the next 11 years, we grew. And by the time I left, we had an operating budget, we ended that fiscal year, the year that I left, with an $18 million budget, and had over 140 staff. So, and they've way surpass that, and they have such a huge impact right now. And they just built, you know, they're building a building in East County, and they're just having tremendous impact and success. And I'm just so excited for the work they're doing right now.
Yeah, the Latinx community has become more and more important here, I think,
yes,
in the Portland area. And, you know, we have our first couple of people in the congressional delegation now.
Yes, we do.
Just in the time that I've been in Portland, you know, things have really changed pretty rapidly.
We're seeing
more women of color, especially in high power roles. And I know you had some really good role models, it sounds like, from Nick Fish and Portland Mayor Tom Potter and Serena Cruz, kind of giving you a model of leadership. And did something about working among people like that give you an idea of, yeah, I can do that. I can do that too, right?
Yeah, I think they did. They really provided great examples in key moments, I believe. Definitely Serena, the fact of her even running when I was, you know, a very young professional person just out of college, and you know, hearing about her running and seeing her, and then seeing that her background maybe wasn't exactly like mine, but was similar, you know, in the ballpark. And it just inspired me so much and gave me confidence about the kind of impact, you know, one can make. And so I didn't realize it back then, but I think those were all key moments that really eventually factored into my decision to run down the road. And I decided to run after talking with Commissioner Fish. We stayed in contact all the time, you know, as I was growing Latino Network, and he was a great mentor of mine, and he would sometimes call and, you know, check up on me and see how I was doing and how the organization was doing. And I would ask for his advice, you know. And so one of the times that we were talking, he told me that it was time for me to start thinking about what I wanted to do next, and that I should consider actually running for office. And I just immediately shut it down. It was like, no, that's not for me. Like, no, what are you saying? And I think I had always envisioned, that support role or different kinds of roles or community-based roles. And I also saw how tough that it could be and taxing on the elected officials I did work for. It was, you know, a lot of intensity. There was a lot of, you know, high demand on your family and your personal time, all these things. And I just didn't know if, you know, I was that person. But he believed in me, and he talked to me. And after, you know, after some time, I believed in myself.
That's amazing. Yeah, that was such a horrible loss for the community when we lost Nick Fish.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had such an amazing impact on so many people.
He really did.
Yeah. Yeah, locally. So once you got in office, 2020, kind of a tough time to take office, right? Some huge, serious challenges in the community here.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was really unusual experience. I was running. I got elected in 2020, but I didn't start until 2021 in January. And so by the time I got elected in May, everything happened in that second half of the year.
Right.
And then so, like, you know, the world changed, and, you know, COVID happened, and the racial reckoning, and, you know, all the thing, all the challenges that we all experienced around the world and also locally. And so it was very different. I started remotely, you know, on council. We didn't meet. We were all remote. And so it was a very strange way.
So you're starting your job remotely.
Yeah. Yes. The second half of my campaign was remote even. So just as I was starting to do field and, you know, knocking on doors, that's when the world shut down. And so we had to do everything differently. So I had an unusual experience. So in some ways, running right now is new to me. So, I mean, I'm going through it as a candidate for the first time, some of the things.
In person.
Yeah, in person. And so we started up, you know, remotely. I got sworn in. I couldn't have, you know, people. I had to have fewer than like four people or three people with me when I got sworn in. You know, we got onboarded remotely. We had our first council sessions for several months remotely. Even as a staff, when I hired people, I had to hire most people remotely. And we didn't all see each other very often, you know, in the beginning. So it was a very strange way to start. And there was just, you know, such excitement and joy and anticipation when we could finally be together in person.
Yeah. When did that actually happen? When did you start to be able to meet?
I believe
in
it was the
again?
Spring okay. of that first year, or maybe the middle of that first year. Mm-hmm. And there were some things that we could start to phase in, you know, in person. And but as soon as our office was able to, and as soon as we got the go ahead from the city, we were in person and present and together as much as we possibly could. I think we were all ready to build mm-hmm. relationships and be around each other.
What was it like during that time when there were protests in the street every single day?
Yeah, it was a really challenging time. And for a lot of that happened after I got elected in May, but I wasn't yet in the city. So I was in this really challenging position where I wasn't yet able to participate as an elected leader, yet I felt so the urgency of getting involved, you mm-hmm. know, so it was this really uncomfortable time where I didn't yet have the authority to weigh in on something, you know, as an elected leader in that role. So it was a lot of, you know, watching and learning and staying on top of the issues and staying, you know, connected to community as much as I could during that time. But it was a challenging time. And I saw how, you know, our city struggled to figure out how to navigate that. And those were really important, I think, lessons that really formed in me the importance of staying connected to one another, staying connected and grounded in community. You know, when our community navigates these tough times, we have to do so together, and we have to stay at the table together and find that path through. And so, yeah, all these things are like present in my mind as we go into this next election cycle, regardless what happens nationally, you know. But I think that we all have that collective experience from different perspectives, and I think that we all have learned something.
Yeah. What did you think of, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be Mayor Wheeler during that time.
I know.
Because he was literally out in the street picking up trash and giving press conferences, and he was just everywhere all the time. And you got to admire that, you know, he was there, you know, trying to show leadership at such a trying time.
Yes, yeah.
And even having like some of the national media, even the president coming after him, and it was just it was almost surreal to see that happening to Portland.
Yeah, it was a rough time, and it was a time that wasn't very fair in a lot of cases mm-hmm. to Portland as well, as we've all experienced, you know, many, many times during that period and shortly thereafter, we would get calls from friends or family from out of state. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, because the impact of, you know, our former president making those comments, referencing, you know, our city in disparaging ways, just gave license to, you know, that misinformation to grow, and that has had very real direct impacts on our city. And so in that way, you know, it was just really challenging to have to always be correcting the record in such a misinformed, you know, way across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing on, well, what's now X, what used to be Twitter, Recently, Trump said something about Portland being burned down, and people are saying this is, you know, they were posting all these beautiful pictures of the waterfront, saying that's just not reality. You know, that it's, I mean, sure, there have been some hits and some damage, but it's it definitely doesn't have this, you know, run down crazy.
No,
I don't think so anyway.
I agree, and you know, there's really important things to learn about being really responsible mm-hmm. with the words you use right. when you have that platform.
Right, absolutely. Now, let's talk about the platform you've had at City Council. You've focused on primarily on housing has been your primary part of what you do for the city. Tell us about what you've done.
Thank you. Yeah, so housing obviously is very important to me. It's central to a lot of the work that I've done in the past, and the work of our organization was definitely aimed at stabilizing families. And also, housing was a big passion of Commissioner Fish, and also Commissioner Cruz when I worked for her too. So I came into this work really wanting to do everything I could to ensure that we were creating the conditions in our city so that every family, every person who wanted to live and work in the city of Portland could do so affordably, and they could do so with the insurance that they could find a place to live. And what we learned is definitely, you know, what Governor Kotek has been really advocating for, is that we are in a housing crisis, and we have so much work to do to get back to that place where we are keeping pace with the demand.
Well, I want to remind everybody, you're listening to Running on Air. This is a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Annette Newell. Today, we are speaking with City Commissioner Carmen Rubio, who is running to be the next Portland mayor. You can join this conversation right now by calling in your questions to the air room. Here's the number, 503-231-8187. Or you can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. So let's get back to our discussion. Another issue that you've really had a strong voice in has been the $4 million in funds for specifically gun violence prevention.
Yes.
What is that money being set aside for, and how do you think it can help this really important problem?
Yes. That's a great question, because we clearly, when you know, going back to 2020-2021, gun violence was on the rise. And one of the first acts that I took when I came into my seat in this role was to make sure that we advocated for, and we built a coalition on our council to advocate for and fund $4 million in gun violence prevention. And that was a very pivotal investment, because what it did was to fund strategies in prevention and intervention to get those numbers down. And now we've seen today, it's resulted in about a 30% increase in gun violence reduction. So we are on the right track, but we also learned some lessons. And some of those lessons include that we cannot take our eye off the ball. It seems that, you know, when we have a gun violence problem, that there's a lot of investment, and then programs start working, and they shore up the foundation, and they're working, and then the rate goes down, and then the investment drops.
Oh.
So we can't do that again, because we cannot keep seeing the waves of that. Lives are too precious to lose, and we have to maintain a sustained effort at prevention and intervention, and that requires community partnerships as well as working with government. So we can do those things.
Another thing that you've been fighting for is the Portland Street Response, providing emergency support for people who are in crisis, and instead of a police officer, you're having somebody who actually has a mental health background to help these people. Why is that such an important issue for you?
It's really critical, because as we're moving into you know, this next generation for our city and our community, we really need to reimagine what you know, public safety and community safety means for us now in this era. And so it's really about ensuring that, you know, one, that we know, we hold the value that everyone deserves to feel safe, no matter where you live, who you are, what language you speak, everyone. And our one of our most basic fundamental services as a city that we can provide is ensuring that our communities feel safe and connected. And that means that we want to make sure that we have the right responders in the right roles. And Portland Street Response provides one of those right responders in the right role for a certain kind of crisis or a certain kind of need. And in this time where we have very many different needs and we have a lot of systems that need to be built and created to sustain and protect our most vulnerable communities, we can't just keep putting band-aids on problems. We need to respond in the way that actually gets to some of the root of the problem. And I believe that Portland Street Response, while it's a response, it is a kind of differentiated response we need for certain kinds of issues. And so that's why I support it.
Yeah, so fascinating. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. I think we're going to take a song break right now. We're here with Carmen Rubio. But when we come back from the song break, we're going to talk a little bit about the future. We've talked about what you've done so far for the city and what your vision is if and when you become our mayor. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Well, you are listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Annette Newell. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. And in this episode, we are talking with City Commissioner Carmen Rubio, who is running for mayor. So we want you to join in this conversation. You can call the air room right now with your questions for the candidates at 503-231-8187. You can also message a question for Carmen on this website, kboo.fm. And you can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. So let's get back to our conversation here, Carmen. One of my favorite quotes I heard you say was along the lines of, I may not be the loudest one in the room, but I get things done.
Yes.
You know, and when you're talking about politics, do you feel a lot of times it's the person who is the loudest in the room that gets the attention, and you're kind of competing with, wait a minute, I'm getting things done here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that as a staff, I've had the unique role, you know, which is very different than a lot of my competitors, or and maybe some people or most people, that I've actually been a staff person, right? And then I moved into this role of being an elected official. And I do think that we are in a time where voters and, you know, our community members just want to see action. And, you know, we've had a rough few years, and I think people are tired of finger pointing and the drama, and they just want to see leaders be competent and work together to solve our most pressing problems. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
So let's talk about your specific plan of what you want to do, mm-hmm. and why you want to be the next mayor here in Portland. First, improving community and public safety. That's number one on your list. What would you like to do there?
For community and public safety? Yes, definitely for housing. I would love to make sure that we do everything we can as a city that is in our jurisdiction to catalyze more housing development and to make more housing affordable at all income levels. We need to make sure that every person has the ability to find a place to live. And the governor has issued, you know, a mandate that we address the housing crisis. And so for Portland, that means that we have to be ready to produce 120,000 more housing units over the next 20 years. So making sure that we clear out any unnecessary codes that we don't no longer need, making sure that we look at investments and incentives around home ownership, looking at ways to make incentives to create more inclusionary housing, affordability up, you know, for different income levels, you know, all these things that we have a strategy. We have to be looking at very creative and innovative ways to get more housing built.
Another thing that is on your list of what you'd like to do is the 90-day fast pass permit approval process for the housing development. And that's something you really had to educate yourself on, I'm sure, is the housing.
Yes.
Because you're basically like the housing person for Portland right now. Why do you think that's so important, especially when we're talking about affordable housing?
It's really important because one of the big impediments to getting timely and efficient and cost-effective development done in the city has been our permitting process. And the permitting process in the city of Portland has been notorious at times. And in our old form of government, our current form of government that's about to change, you know, the permitting process is split among multiple bureaus. And those bureaus at times can be under multiple commissioners. So as you can imagine, it can sometimes have an impact on the timeliness of that project getting through all of those checkpoints. And so what we wanted to do is make sure that we do everything we can to make the process more efficient and create more of an incentive for people to want to invest in Portland, want to build housing in Portland. And this 90-day fast pass is something that we created and that I hope to implement as soon as possible, which is really comprised of, if you have all of your financial capital stack ready to go and you come to the city and you show us that it's ready to go and you're building housing, middle income or affordable housing, we will issue you a fast pass and make sure that it's done in 90 days. And so we're hoping that that will spur some excitement and interest and help us start meeting making progress towards that 120,000 units that we are needing to build over the next 20 years.
Definitely need that. Thanks, Carmen. Well, support for Running on Air, we wanted to mention this, comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website. That's lwvpdx.org. And the League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. Again, the website for that is lwvpdx.org. Okay, let's talk about reducing homelessness. What's an example of something that does work?
So what I have learned in these last set of years is that there are no shortcuts to addressing these issues. And, you know, it took us multiple decades of disinvestment in housing at the federal level and, you know, all the way down to us that helped us arrive at this issue or the place that we are right now. And so we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to hold up our corner of the system. And that also means that our jurisdictional partners need to do the same. We all have a piece in making sure that we have a continuum from shelter all the way through housing, right? That shelter to housing continuum. And one of my big goals is to do everything we can to reduce and ultimately end unsheltered homelessness. And I led a delegation to Los Angeles to look at different kinds of models. And by far, the one model that had the most success, demonstrated success, were shelters paired with services, on-site services. And so for me, it really means three things. And these are just fundamental basics. We know that this works. We've seen it work. We need shelters, temporary alternative shelters that have three components. That you have a place for people's possessions, you care for people's pets, and also privacy. Those three things, if you have them as part of the shelter, paired together with on-site services, actually make a difference in outcomes, and there are successes with people actually eventually getting housed and staying in housing. The next thing is also making sure that we have the capacity for enough capacity to serve people for more increased addiction services and also mental health services. So when we talk about those on-site services, those are the ones that they need, that need to be there and ready and available. It doesn't help people if we don't have a system that's up and running or tell them, oh, come back for an appointment in 3 weeks. You know, people need help immediately. And then the third thing is that we need to accept the fact that we will always have the need for permanent supportive housing. There will always be vulnerable people that will need that long-term support to stay housed so that they don't return to homelessness. So I really think that these three key things are what make up a stable system, and we need to keep investing in that and expanding that, because that is what's been proven to work.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of discussion about housing first. Is that the best way to go, or do you have to have just a combination of the services with the housing in order for it to be effective?
Right. We need all of it. And housing first does not mean housing only. Mm-hmm. You know, we need different kinds of models for different kinds of responses and different kinds of needs, because unsheltered homelessness is not, you know, the people who are experiencing homelessness, they are not monolithic. They are all there for different experiences and different reasons. And so we need to be prepared for responses for those differentiated reasons.
What are some of the things you would do to try to bring back Portland's downtown?
That is, you know, one of my most, the topics that gets me very excited, because I feel like there's so much potential for our downtown. And our downtown is, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the, you know, it's the showpiece of the heart and soul of our city. We look to our downtowns as an indicator sometimes about multiple things, you know, for better or worse. That's really how we look at downtowns across, you know, the country. And, you know, we need to reimagine our downtowns. You know, COVID has changed how people work, and that is not going to go back to how it was before. So we need to lean into this new normal, the new reality, and pivot and figure out how we can reintroduce vibrancy, reactivate that, you know, that downtown core. And I really think it's about bringing more housing into downtown. When you have housing, you have retail, you have groceries and food and life. When you have activations downtown, reinvesting in our arts and culture in a very meaningful, targeted way. And then also taking care of our small business community as a part of that vibrant downtown. We're a community that is comprised of, our local economy is comprised of 61% small businesses. And that is a significant part of our economy. And we need to start leaning into that and being a city that takes pride in that.
And you created the city's new Office of Small Businesses.
Yes, yes.
What does this do?
So this, very similar to what we did in permitting, where remember how I mentioned that there are several different bureaus that have a piece of permitting, mm-hmm. and we consolidated permitting into one authority in one office. Very similar to Office of Small Business. We had different pieces in different bureaus, and it was often incumbent upon the small business owner to self-navigate through all these different bureaus to get the services that they need. And small businesses are needing to grow. Oftentimes they, you know, they don't have very many employees. They can't take that time to navigate the city on their behalf. We need to provide a service to our small businesses. Again, 61% of our local economy is comprised by small businesses. We need to start acting like it. So it's long been time since we've needed an Office of Small Business. And we finally, for a city of our size, have one. And so that is what the intention of that small business office is to find a way to provide that those services in a one-stop shop, but also to start taking an assessment of what small businesses need to be supported from the city, what they need to thrive, and so that we can have a better impact on the city side of making sure that they have the supports that they need.
Okay, and another big thing on your list is the green economy and jobs.
Absolutely.
And how these, the climate crisis as well as the jobs crisis, actually the jobs report that just came out was pretty good, but both of these goals could be, I guess, worked on at the same time in harmony. They don't necessarily need to be detached from each other.
Yes, absolutely. The green economy is here, and we need, as a city, to be at the forefront of it. There, for many, you know, many years, Portland was a leader in terms of green economy, in making sure, in sustainability, at the forefront and leading edge of that for environmental, policies and also climate action. And so we can take up that mantle again. And we already have a very committed community-based, leadership here and activations. Our community cares about climate. We just need our city now to step into the leadership role and match what the community is wanting. And we have all the ingredients. We have, an unprecedented opportunity with the Portland Clean Energy Fund to actually make huge moves in climate action. And we are taking those moves, and we are partnering with community-based organizations, capacitating them, and also capacitating our most underserved areas, often those areas and often those populations that are hit first and hardest when climate change is upon us. And we're seeing the impacts of the extreme weather events already. And so our city is now in this position where we are starting to be, again, a leader in those things. We created, under my leadership, we just created the first ever Sustainability and Climate Commission. That is going to be huge, because we're finally creating a public table where people can actually have a say in recommending policy to their city council about taking meaningful climate action. We elevated the sustainability officer to be, one of a key leadership role in this new government. That is critical. And also, we did major reforms around PSEF so that it unlocked the ability to partner with many more government partners and community-based partners through an investment plan that gives us more scale and opportunity to do unique partnerships and big moves. So I'm very excited for the potential of all this. And I think that there's going to be some very big and exciting things to come.
You were also talking about creating a clean industry hub.
Yes.
In Portland. What would that look like?
So this was a really interesting opportunity. When I first came in to my role, I inherited a bureau that had a proposal on the table where there was a lot of division. And it was around creating a new tax or a fee on industry. And so there was that tension between jobs or climate, and so when I came into it, it's like, hey, we need to figure out a way that we can show that we can do these things together. We can still have good jobs, jobs that are available for working people, and we can still care about our climate and make progress and be innovative. So what we did is we turned, these issues we were grappling into an opportunity by going on a learning trip to Denmark, where we looked at the city of Kalundborg and looked at how they worked with their industry. They're a very industry heavy, city, but by using I'm forgetting the term, but where you recycle, everything, and it's like one person's waste is another person's, resource. And so we learned about industrial symbiosis and how we can turn these opportunities that are waste opportunities into alignment of resources and it gave us so many ideas about how we can work together in greening our city, greening our workforce, and also greening our industry leaders here in Portland. So that's led to the creation of a partnership among industry with the private sector and also Portland State University and then the city around a clean industry hub. And so we're hoping to get some resources eventually to that hub so that we can start resourcing transformative projects in industry that would move them to more greener, cleaner practices. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One more time on the housing front and the homelessness front, because I think that's just top of mind for you and mm-hmm. and all of our leaders locally and for the people who live here. I know that there has been a joint office between Multnomah County and Portland that. How would you describe the relationship there and how could it be improved and work together better?
I would say that that relationship has been rocky, right, in the past. And I do also believe that at the time that it was formed, we had a different landscape. Our issues were different. Things have definitely increased. And then, you know, the pandemic happened, which exacerbated and crystallized a lot of the challenges that we had. And it showed us where a lot of the holes were in our system and even in our partnership, I would say. And so what I will say is that, you know, we've had a lot of time to look at what the issues are. We know what the gaps are. And we are making progress together, but we have had to reset the table a little bit. And part of it is we also have to have the relationship with different jurisdictions enough, and in this case with the county, to have, you know, productive accountability and productive discussions around what needs to change on both our ends in order to make this partnership work so that we're addressing these root causes together, but we're also holding up our ends of the bargain. And we're making some progress, but they've been some tough talks. But this is the key thing. We need the trust with each other to hold those accountability discussions. And that's a very key distinction around what I believe will make the difference in having a better outcome together. So I'm hopeful. And the thing is, we need each other because the city has certain roles that the county doesn't have, and the county has roles that the city doesn't have. So it is incumbent upon us both as jurisdictions and as leaders within those jurisdictions to stay at the table and find solutions together for the public. That's mm-hmm. what we're elected to do, and that's what we need to do.
Yeah. How is the mayor's role going to be different with this new form of government?
That's a great question. And, you know, so much is still up in the air because it's unprecedented. We haven't had people right. in these roles, and it's changing all in one fell swoop, right, in this next cycle. But what will be the main points that will be different from this role, this mayor, to the next? The mayor currently has a role on council and runs and presides over council. The mayor also has a vote on council. And in this next government, the mayor will not be on council, will not preside over a council, will not have a vote on council, except for tiebreaker vote. So that is one key distinction. The other thing is that is staying the same is that the mayor will still present the annual budget. The mayor has that role in this form of government. In the next form of government, we'll still have the role of preparing the budget process and proposing the budget together with the legislative role of council members. But still, that will be the primarily the mayor's charge is the budget process and presenting the budget. And the other thing that the mayor will do is we'll have the ability also to hire the city manager. We've never had a city manager, or the city administrator, as it will be called. And that is a huge new thing. And in my belief, that will be a huge game changer for the city of Portland.
What will you be looking for in a city manager?
Absolutely, in a city manager, we need someone that understands how systems work, that has a keen understanding about how people make up organizations and how organizational change impacts workers and morale. Change management is going to be very important. I also believe that we need someone that will have enough knowledge that has the credibility so that staff who work at the city, which we have very talented staff, very dedicated staff at the city of Portland, they need to trust that that new city administrator has their best interests at heart as well. So it's going to be a tall order for this new person who's going to be in this role, whomever this person is. But I do think that they need the credibility and to hold the trust of the workforce. They also, I believe, have to be very, very skilled in communication and ensuring that the public understands what's going on every step of the way, but also internally, that the staff internally also understand what's going on and stuff every step of the way as well. So it's a tall order for someone, but I believe people are out there.
Yeah, and there's like so many changes that are on the way for Portland. It's really going to be transformative. And I think that's reflected in how many people are running for all these offices.
Absolutely.
We've got like 98 people running for the council, 28 for mayor, so 118 people trying to get these jobs. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I've never seen any. This is the opportunity of a lifetime for this city. This is pivotal moment in our city's history. This will not likely happen again, you know, for at least in any of our lifetimes. So we have to get it right. And this is coming on the heels of one of the hardest times in our city. So we know some things. We know some things that we have challenges in. We know some places where we have gaps and learnings. And so this is the time to put our learnings into practice. And this is the time to find the right leaders for the right moment. And I believe that in this next set of years, we're creating the blueprint for how the mayor will be in this next set of years, and then for the generation after that. And we're setting the culture for the generation after that. We're setting, you know, the blueprint for how city council will function for the next generation. So these moments really matter, and we need to be looking for those skills and temperament and collaboration that are going to be essential to creating a functional government, because that's what people voted for.
Mm-hmm. And if a voter is out there is still trying to figure out who they're voting for and why they should vote for you and why you're the right person at this moment in Portland's history to take on all these challenges, what would you tell them?
I would say that I am uniquely qualified, more than any of my other competitors. I have the executive level experience. I believe I'm the only one that's run a large organization of the size that I have, of all of my competitors. I also have the internal policy experience. I've worked at the county, I've worked at the city as a staff level, and now I have the experience as an elected official. And I have the temperament. I know how to be a collaborator. I've done it my whole life, but especially in this job, I've demonstrated time and again that I know how to build coalitions. I know how to work with people to get the job done and to make those tough decisions, and sometimes to call the question when it needs to be called. And those are all essential things that we need. We also need, in this time of rebuilding our city, we need leaders who can work with other leaders productively. It's not a time for us to waste another several years finger pointing and having stagnation. We need the ability to move through our most pressing problems and challenges and do it together and have the trust with other leaders to have those accountability conversations. And those are things that I'm known for, and those that are things that I do very well. And the last thing I'll say is that by far I am more accomplished than any of my other competitors that I work with currently on council. I have, and I really encourage people to look at our records. In the short time that I've been there, in nearly 4 years, I am by far the candidate with the most accomplishments.
You do have a lot of people endorsing you as well, including the governor and former governors as well. So you do have a lot of support. I do have to ask you, however, about the parking ticket situation. And I know you've responded to that before. I can kind of sympathize. I got 2 parking tickets my very first week here in Portland. So I know it's pretty easy to get some parking tickets, but I know you wanted to basically just give us an answer as to why that happened, and so people can know.
Yes. So that was the majority of the time was during the time that our organization, when I was at the nonprofit, was growing. We were located in a certain heavily patrolled area, and concurrent to that time, when we were growing very quickly, and I had a lot of responsibility for a growing organization, and I also had some personal issues in my family, and assumed some pretty major responsibility roles that were not the norm, but for a while in my life, that was something I had to do. And so I chose to prioritize my work and, you know, other people, and at personal expense. It wasn't the right decision to make, but it was what I thought was best at the time, and definitely would have done it differently, of course. But those were paid off years ago. Mm-hmm. And definitely it's something that I've done a lot of reflecting on.
Okay. Any closing thoughts that you have about the direction you see for our city, the future you see for our city?
I just, you know, I love the city so much. It is something that I think about so much, and the city's given me a lot in my life and given my my family so much. So I believe in its future. I know that we have the ability as Portlanders, when we lean into our values, we get amazing things done. And that's the thing. We don't have to forget who we are in order to change things. We don't have to forget who we are as Portlanders, what our values are, in order to change the status quo and make things happen that are good for Portland. You know, and I just really believe in a Portland that has a place for all of us to be, to live and to thrive at every stage in our life, that is safe, affordable for working families, robust downtown, leading in the green economy, and also at the forefront of arts and culture. And, you know, a city that, you know, knows who we are as Portlanders and doesn't forget our journey and make sure that the things that make us special are there for the next generation. And I know we can get there. I know that we can. And it's something that I'm reminded every day when I'm talking to people in our neighborhoods and in our small businesses and even our downtown. And we need to be proud of our city, and we need to stand up for our city and change that narrative, because we can do this. We can do this together.
Thank you so much, Carmen. Yeah. Really, really a pleasure talking to you today.
You too. Thank you.
Well, you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Portland City